Anybody have any ideas what we could do? Any suggestions? Yes, Andy.
What if we changed our outgoing answering machine message so it just had a little more zing and a little more pep?
Zing and pep. See, those are the kind of words we're looking for. Yes, Jim.
What about if we did an even newer voicemail message that had even more zing and pep?
Now we're cooking.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you once again, finally off a Giants win. Before we get into everything, we got to take care of the housekeeping, so first things first, you can follow us on Twitter, you can follow me at EthanGSN, follow Weiss at NYG Daily, follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe, iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, of course, Spotify. Go ahead, check out our sponsors for today's episodes. MyBookie.ag, promo code NYG. You've heard me talk about them in previous episodes. I'll talk about them again later. And of course, Poster Burner, promo code GothamSN for 10% off your order. I'll tell you about them as well later. Weiss, we're off a Giants win, and it's a weird feeling.
Yes, we are. It is a weird feeling. I know it was a lot of mixed reactions after the Giants win.
Yes.
It was really weird.
No,
I just logged off Twitter.
Yeah, smart man. I'll say this much for, and here's how I feel and how I'm rationalizing it. And a lot of people over the last even year, who've basically said, "Oh, you don't just take a QB to take a QB." Well, you're right, and I was never on that bandwagon. I truly believe that the class that was just drafted is truly going to be one that we look back upon, which is why for me, the only guy I consider at this moment inside the top five is obviously Justin Herbert. And even then, I'm not like 1,000,000% sold on him. So you know what? You get a win. You get the guys in a good mood. You give Eli, or you at least start to give him, a good send-off. And one win, you know what? If it bumps you from the second overall pick to the fifth overall pick, it's not something I'm going to be too upset right now because, again, I'm not as high on Herbert at the moment, that's obviously subject to change, as I was on guys like Mayfield and Jackson and Rosen last year. So take the time to enjoy the win. It's been a while, and there's not going to be many more. The only other time that it might happen is actually coming up against Tampa Bay. So take the time to enjoy the win. It's good to get some of the young guys on the team like Saquon, Odell, Shep. You know, everyone's excited. Take the win. Be happy about it. Don't complain too much. Make a few jokes. But that's how I'm taking the win in stride.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I think, you know, winning is good for establishing culture. And guys that they have in the locker room right now, like Odell and Saquon and Sterling Shepard and even Will Hernandez, some of the young core guys that are part of the future, you don't just establish culture by constantly losing games and
right,
quote unquote tanking. It comes with winning games, winning these type of games where, you know, Odell goes, you know, has two touchdowns and Saquon has a couple of big plays, you know, and guys like Lorenzo Carter have good games. So you need to develop some sort of culture like that. So winning these type of games where, look, the Giants are not a talented team, but I think you can make a very good case that they were the talented team on Monday night. And I know that's not saying much.
It's like being the tallest midget in the room, but yeah.
Right. But in terms of like this situation where you have these young players who are part of your future, you want to be able to establish culture, and you do that by being able to win the games where you know you should win. And
right, especially when you want to go into next year with Pat Shurmur still as the head coach, it builds confidence. You don't have the locker room falling apart like you did last year with Ben McAdoo.
Right, and I think if you look at last year, part of the reasons why the locker room fell apart, aside from like everyone getting hurt, was the simple fact that the Giants were losing so many games back to back to back to back. I mean, they are doing that this year, but they were losing games last year where, you know, they were the more talented team, but they were still losing. So in games like this where you're more talented than the team you're facing, and they were, in my opinion, more talented, it's good to get to good wins like this. Now, as far as Eli Manning goes, I think, look, you know, if you went into this game thinking to yourself that, you know, Eli Manning can still play this game, you're obviously coming out with that saying, oh, he can still play, he can still play. I don't think he played particularly well.
He didn't. He went 19 for 31 with 188 yards, obviously three touchdowns, but let's not act like he was being asked to do terribly much here.
Right. I think he made a lot of mistakes in that game, and I'm not going to sit here and get on Eli about that. My whole point is that for Eli, it was good for him to have that game-winning drive. I think, to me, this is more of a final hoorah for him, mm-hmm. if that makes sense, yeah. than some sort of a career resurrection, in my opinion.
No, I agree. So, it's really the only way you can look at it. I mean, you'll have the apologists. I know I saw Pat Traina throwing out a couple tweets about, this is what happens when you give Eli time in the pocket. Like, let's not act like some of the plays that Eli made were because he finally decided to move his feet and not go down like a pile of quicksand, right? So
right.
This game was not changing anyone's mind. If you were in the camp that Eli is finished, you're still there, like you said, if you're still in the camp of he's got life left and this game only helped your terribly sad argument, but it is what it is. Saquon, obviously unbelievable. Odell back in the end zone, 2 touchdowns, should have had 4 if Eli hit him in stride on that fucking deep ball that he underthrew by about 20 yards. And Sterling Shepard, get up there, young, with that nice grab in the corner of the end zone. Good to see, and the young guys are having fun.
Yeah, and can I say one thing about Saquon?
Yeah.
I think he's an exceptional player, but last Monday, and I think if we go back and we actually dissect each run from this season, he left some holes and sort of bounced out.
His thing.
Yeah, and I think that's something he has to work on. So he's a great player, but there's still some room for improvement. I think Jeff Schwartz, former Giants offensive lineman. He's sort of in the media business right now. Mm-hmm. He did a great breakdown. He posted a couple clips on his Twitter account that I watched, and it was unbiased. There was no agenda. He simply said, "Look, great, great player," and he is a great, great player. But look, this is an area he can improve on, and I think that Saquon will be the first to tell you that, and that was something that was coming out when he was coming out of college. You know, people talked about that as well, as that being one of his quote-unquote weaknesses. So, again, you know, there's a lot room for improvement. It's good to get a win, especially of a team that you should beat. But, you know, I see a lot of people panicking. I don't think you should panic.
Panicking about what?
They beat a 2-7 team. They're going to win, you know, 3, 4, 5 games.
No, they're going to win maybe one more game.
I think so. I mean, look, let's look at it. They beat a 2-7 49er team, mm-hmm. who was playing with a third-string quarterback making a second career start, yep. who was undrafted, by the way. They, outside of George Kittle and Matt Breida, had no other offensive weapons to really account for. I mean, Marquise Goodwin, yeah, but
that's going to come with the territory. When your linebackers stink, you're going to be able to expose them with the tight end,
right,
and the running back.
But yeah. I think outside of Matt Breida and George Kittle, there was really nobody that garnered a lot of attention from the Giants defense.
Correct.
And they still weren't able to generate any pass rush, mm-hmm. as you guys all saw. And the Giants offensive line, I thought, played well. Probably played, I don't know if you agree with me, I thought they probably played their best game of the season.
Yeah.
Specifically Nate Solder. But again, you know, we're talking about a 2-7 49er team that is playing with Nick Mullins at quarterback and really only George Kittle and Matt Breida to worry about. And the Giants still barely beat them. And it was two interceptions that they needed. You know, so I don't see this as being some sort of run they're about to put together. I'm not buying any of that. It's a great last hoorah for Eli, but, you know, we still know, you know, where this is headed. And so I get people want to get excited and think that there's something there, but I just don't see it. They just beat a team that's worse than them, in my opinion.
A couple stats that I'm taking a look at right now from Pro Football Focus. You said it, Nate Solder had the second highest grade of any offensive tackle in the league at 84.1. Outside of Solder, Will Hernandez, Spencer Pulley, and Jamon Brown all had grades of 53. And this was Will Hernandez's worst graded game of his rookie season so far. Eye test versus the analytics. I mean, I think we're all just still sort of fixated on Jamon Brown being able to pick up a simple stunt.
That was amazing.
It was amazing. It was literally amazing. I almost jumped out of my chair.
I watched it like 4 times.
Me too. I put the GIF and I did it on repeat. But for I do know. I mean, there was a play where he gave up a sack. So still some things to work on. But the fact that he and Chad Wheeler were able to coordinate and have the I'll say the chemistry after a week or two together to pick up a simple stunt. I mean, hey, best offensive line play of the entire fucking season as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and you know what's crazy? The Giants started the season with their right side of the offensive line being Patrick Omame and Eric Flowers, and both of those players are now in Jacksonville, a team that everyone thought that Eli Manning should get traded to.
Well, what do you think? Do you think that Tom Coughlin sees the Eli to Jacksonville rumors and brings in Eric Flowers and Patrick Omame to scare Eli from ever coming, or to kill Blake Bortles so that Eli does come next year?
Can I be perfectly honest with you?
Yes.
Perfectly honest. Like, yeah, I'm glad you asked this question. I legitimately think that Eric Flowers was more of a Tom Coughlin pick than a Jerry Reese pick.
I mean, that would be what... Yeah. I mean, there would be no other reason that Tom Coughlin brings him in.
I mean, I'm just going to put that out there based on what I've seen happen to Eric Flowers since he's been released. I think he was a Tom Coughlin guy. But again, that's a whole other discussion. But to answer your question, I thought it was laughable that people thought that Eli Manning should ask for a trade to Jacksonville. Well, yeah, have you watched Jacksonville's offense?
I mean, it's very, very facetious, tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah. And then, you know, just to see not only Eric Flowers go there, but then Patrick Omame go back there. It's just hilarious.
Bobby Hart's waiting by the phone. Next game is against Tampa Bay. Their Giants are actually favored by a point. So, I mean, hey, you're going up against Fitzpatrick. I don't think that they'll win because, listen, if it gets to the point where we're in a shootout, the Giants just can't keep up. But I'm with you.
I don't think they're going to win that game.
Yeah, we'll break it down more in depth in a little bit. But then they're at Philadelphia against the Bears defense, at Washington, home against Tennessee, against Indy, who their offensive line's coming together, and then home against Dallas. So I really just don't see another winnable game on the schedule except for Tampa Bay. And even then, we both just agree that we don't think they win.
Yeah.
Let's see. What do you think of the JPP stuff that came out today? That there's conflicting reports that John Mara never reached out to JPP after he was traded, and then John Mara saying that he did text JPP and never got a response.
First of all, I think I'll put it this way. If JPP is telling the truth, right, and nobody from ownership ever reached out to him, I think he's 100% right to be angry. And I know you're going to disagree with me, but just hear me out for a second. Prior to the firework accident, JPP, specifically that 2011 Super Bowl run, he made a play that literally saved the Giants season. Like, the Giants don't win a Super Bowl if JPP doesn't block that field goal attempt against the Cowboys. On top of that, he had 16 and a half sacks. Point being is he was arguably either the second or the third most important player on that Super Bowl team.
Sure.
And on top of that, I felt like, you know, given the fact that he was drafted here, he gave 8 hard years. And I know the firework accident was a thing, but here's the thing. That firework accident, if it happened and then, you know, he came back from it, but in between that, there was obviously some stuff about him not being able to, or him not wanting the Giants to see his hand. I think to me that was more business related, and I think that was a decision more based on his family and his agent telling him, hey, you might not want to do this. And in my opinion, I felt like that worked out well for both sides, whereas JPP came back, played with a cast on his arm, showed that he could still play, had a couple of solid seasons. I think he, you know, the fact that the Giants franchised him the year after the firework incident, and then he played on that 1-year deal as well, I think he earned that massive contract. And it wasn't, and I don't think it was a case of, oh, you know, John Mara doing him a favor, because you see Tampa Bay's willing to pay him his money right now. So I think for me, given what he's meant to this organization and the good years that he's had, I thought, listen, an owner picking up the phone and calling one of the more important players from his Super Bowl team and saying, hey, thank you for the 8 years, because it's not like JPP left it via free agency. It's one thing if JPP left on his own by his choice, and he were to come out and say, I'm pissed off that nobody from ownership reached out to me, or I'm hurt that nobody from ownership reached out to me, then he has nothing to stand on. But in this case, you know, you traded him. You signed off on a trade to trade him, and not picking up the phone and saying, "Hey, man, thank you for the great years you had. I appreciate it." To me, I think that just shows another level of incompetence from the owner. I saw that Eli reached out to him. I think Zach Diassi and Landon Collins were some other guys that reached out to him. And I think that, you know, John Mara should learn from his quarterback a little bit and reach out to him. And I think I understand where JPP is coming from if, in fact, John Mara did not reach out. And if he did via text, if you're going to text the guy, just pick up the phone and call him. So that's my opinion on it. I know many people have different opinions on it. I know the fan base is sort of on one side of the fence or on the other side of the fence when it comes to JPP. But listen, I think he gave 8 great years to the Giants. And, you know, I think the owner should have picked up the phone and called him.
So, I mean, for me, it's fun. Like I have no ill will towards JPP, right? It's a matter of seeing both sides of it. I totally I probably didn't convey this well enough in my tweet earlier. I have no issue. Well, okay, not no issue. I understand why JPP would not want to meet with team doctors. At the same time, you also need to understand why that would piss John Mara off. Because at the end of the day, it's a business. And if your star player blows off half his fucking hand because he's dumb enough to play with fireworks during a contract year, then, you know, I don't know what to tell you. So, you know, well, I don't think we'll ever find out the full truth of this story. And I just think it's a dumb, there's nothing else to really talk about. So let's bring it up.
The one thing I'll say, when the firework incident happened, JPP talked about how he didn't make the decision to not let the Giants come see him. He just didn't know they were here. Now, yeah, whether or not bullshit. That's truth or not, I don't know. But my thing is John Mayer, you were not pissed off enough, whereas you paid him gave him a $62 million contract. But hey, man, just to me, like, I feel as though prior to the firework accident, in my opinion, JPP was, and I'm going to steal a line from Carl Banks, he was like an institutional guy. He was a guy the Giants drafted. He was a raw talent. He developed into what they envisioned. He had some rough years with injuries. And on top of that, the guy played with a bad back. If you remember, I think it was 2012.
Always injured.
He played with a bad back for the team. And you can say, you can even point the finger at the Giants team doctors for not forcing him, but for allowing him to play when he had that injured back. Maybe that made it significantly worse. But I just think, I mean, listen, you know, I understand where he's coming from. I felt like, listen, a guy that was that much of an integral part to your Super Bowl team, he deserved at least a phone call from the owner.
Fair enough. All right, moving on. Thoughts on Gettleman and Kevin Abrams hanging out Saturday in Oregon?
Hanging out? They were basically riding Justin Herbert's coattails. Did you see some of the tweets that were coming out?
Yeah, they were literally just on him.
Yeah,
like white on rice.
I think it's pretty significant. Yeah. I think that any, you know, obviously we know that the Giants have constantly been at Oregon games, whether it's been in Oregon or, you know, on the road, they've traveled there. The scouts have been there. For Dave Gettleman and Kevin Abrams to both be there and to be that much attached to Justin Herbert, I think to me that's them taking their next step in the evaluation process. Mm-hmm. And that's significant to me. I think, does that mean that they're all in on Justin Herbert? No, but I just think they're taking that next step in their evaluation of Herbert, and I think to me it's pretty significant that they're at that stage already.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they know the writing's on the wall. I mean, you don't just, you know, hang out and do nothing when your team is at the time 1-7, and right. When Justin Herbert's the number one projected pick, you go and number one quarterback. You go and you check him out. And obviously, Oregon's got a really good offensive line as well, so I'm sure they did some scouting for the Hog Mollies up front. But listen, it's just good to see. You know, it's the guy. It's the guy who is employing his scouting staff. It's the guy who's grooming Kevin Abrams to maybe be his successor in a few years. And for them to be that hands-on, I mean, you have to be. And it's just a good thing to see. So I'm happy with it.
And that's what I don't get about, like, fans that were freaking out, like, oh, my God, we're going to bring back Eli. You know, like, I saw people like, do you think they're going to extend Eli? It's like a week ago, they had to sit Eli down and tell him that, hey, you know, you're the starter, but nothing is promised after that.
Right.
And then the Saturday before the game, the GM, the assistant GM, and like the manager of their West Coast scouting team was watching Justin Herbert. But all of a sudden, a win on Monday night, and they throw everything away. Yeah. And then it's like, oh no, we're sticking with Eli.
Yeah.
Like, no, like, just, it's like every, like, that's why I completely logged off Twitter, because I'm like, oh my God, like, this is just way too much. I mean, I saw people that were like, there are people that are literally saying Eli can still play. You know, we have our offensive line in the future. We know all we need to do is just drop the tackle. And on the other hand, we had people that were just like, this is the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're going to miss out on the quarterback. We're going to be stuck for 10 years. And I'm just like, oh, my God, let me just go to sleep.
Yeah.
Because it was crazy.
We just spoke about it briefly. Yeah. This team wins, I think, zero more games.
Yeah. I'm going to say one. I think.
I hope it's at home, too.
I don't know if it'll be at home.
I don't think it will be. I hope.
Yeah, division games are sort of tricky, and I have a hard time believing, as bad as the division is, that they're going to go 0-6. So if I were to pick one more game, it's going to be one of those three division games. I don't know which one. Now, one of them is at home in Week 17 against the Cowboys. Could that be the one? Maybe, but I don't know. I just think that they're not going to go 0-6 in division, but I see one win. Here's the reason why I don't think they're going to beat the Bucs. We talked about their win over the 49ers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was, for the 49ers really only had two guys that they, and one guy in the passing game they really had to worry about,
right?
And that was George Kittle. But against this Tampa Bay team, listen, I know
Godwin,
you know,
Jackson, Howard.
DeSean Jackson, doesn't matter what jersey he's wearing, he's always killing the Giants. Doesn't matter who their quarterback is. I know Fitzpatrick is bad, but you name their weapons. I mean, Mike Evans, DeSean Jackson, Humphreys.
And you know what the funny thing is? If you compare Eli and Fitzpatrick's stat lines from last week, they are legitimately polar opposites. That team had 500 yards of offense and had, 6 points in the red zone. It was, like, impressive how fucking bad they were. Eli had 188 yards and 3 touchdowns.
And the funniest thing was about that Tampa Bay game is the coach sits up there after the game and basically admits that, yeah, he took back play calling.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like he's asking to be fired.
Yeah.
Like, but as I was saying about their weapons, and we missed out two key ones, Cameron Brate and O.J. Howard.
Yep.
Tight ends. George Kittle. I mentioned the Howard, Giants.
But yeah.
And yeah.
They got two.
O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate. So, and they got a pretty solid offensive line as well. So I think, you know, if the Giants aren't able to generate pressure, I think that as bad as Fitzpatrick is, I think he'll be able to spread that ball around.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the Giants' struggles are going to be. Is being able to actually stop Tampa Bay's offense, who, you know, they didn't score points, but they got 500 yards of offense against a pretty good Redskins defense. So it's a tough game for the Giants. In terms of matchups, I don't see this being in their favor.
Yeah, me neither.
So I think Tampa wins this game.
Yeah, no, I agree. It doesn't help that it's going to be against fucking Fitzpatrick. It is what it is. You look at the stat line. Again, Eli, not impressive, and it took 2 interceptions from a second-year UDFA quarterback to get a win against arguably, I would say, what would you say San Francisco is the third worst team in the league?
Yeah, I think between Oakland.
I think Oakland's one where two.
Yeah, Oakland, the Giants, San Francisco, and I'll even throw Arizona in there. Yeah. I think of those four teams, you can make a legitimate case for any of them. I think Oakland has the strongest case, but San Francisco, New York, I mean, that to me, that's a toss-up.
All right. Anything else before we get into questions?
No, I got nothing for you in terms of this game.
Yeah, all right. Before we get into questions, let me tell you about our sponsors. Fine folks at mybookie.ag. I've been telling you about them all season. I've been making money with them all season. Sometimes I feel like I'm using them as my personal ATM. They're literally giving away money. 100% deposit bonus on up to $1,000 when you use the promo code NYG upon sign up. Go to the website. Go take Tampa Bay money line this weekend because they're going to beat the Giants. Double your money. Mybookie.ag, promo code NYG. It's that easy. Come gamble with me. Follow me on the Action app. Let's have some fun together. And let's give a shout out to the folks at posterburner.com. Weiss has seen the OBJ poster I got. At this point, I might as well add Saquon to the collection because he's been that good. So go ahead, check out posterburner.com. Use the promo code GothamSN. That's promo code, not NYG. GothamSN for 10% off your order. They make beautiful movie-sized prints, glossy, framed, however you want them. It took me literally 5 minutes to make my poster. So go check them out, posterburner.com. Promo code GothamSN. All right. Let me pull up some of the questions. I think we actually had a decent slate this week and few that were of the facetious and joking manner. But let me pull them
up. There was a lot of people that were panicking.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, unbelievable. Yeah.
This is from Kevin Abrams' burner account. If Javon Brown continues to play well, what would be a contract you'd be willing to give him?
Probably what we gave Patrick Obama.
I was literally about to say the same thing. I mean, probably a little bit less money. Maybe give him like a 2-year deal. What was Omame's? 3 years, 15?
Yeah, it was 3 years, 15.
3 years, 15. Yeah, maybe I'll give him like 2 years, 8.
Yeah. And if I'm Jermon Brown, I'm looking for a 2-year deal because 2 years left of the CBA,
right,
you want to be a free agent, exactly, when those new rules roll over because, hey, might be more money on the table for the players.
Exactly, yeah. So I'd be looking for something in that 2-year range. Let's see. From Will, DG Saquon and our first to Kansas City for John Dorsey, who says no.
What was that?
It was to trade for John Dorsey.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What will you do if Dave Gettleman gives Eli an extension? Not happening. This one's from Steve. Do you think we will see Kyle Lauletta play at some point this season? The million-dollar question. Yes. I mean, yes.
Yes.
Now that we've got another week and we've got an Eli win under our belt, what is your – give me your timeline. We went over this last episode.
Yeah. I still think that – we're probably going to – like I predicted, I think it was the Tampa Bay game where we'd see him, or the Philly game. But I think whenever they get mathematically eliminated – and I know the NFC is bad and they probably won't get eliminated till like week 14 or 15. But I think that's what we're looking at right now. Mm-hmm. There's still that slight window. I read some scenario how the Giants can be 2 games back if they beat – Tampa Bay and Philly loses and Washington loses and Dallas loses. Like, I read some wild scenario. But realistically, I mean, I think as soon as they get mathematically eliminated, I mean, you might as well just get him in there. But my thing is that, is he even ready? Like, yeah. Can he play? Like, can he run a huddle? Can he do the basic stuff?
The only defense that I feel comfortable starting him against is the Colts. And that 2 week period is not enough for evaluation.
It's not even about like who he's playing against. Like, can he get in there and call a play in the huddle? Can he run a huddle? Can he be able to call out, you know, blitzes? Can he be able to, you know, read the basics of a defense? Like, I don't know if he can do that. Yeah. You know, like, is he even ready for that yet? So I mean, I think he'll play at some point in the season when they're quote unquote mathematically eliminated, mm-hmm. but you're not going to get much, you know, out of him. But he still has to play. Like, I'm still on that you have to play him.
Yeah, we agree on that.
But when it is, I think right now, I think whenever they're mathematically eliminated, in my opinion.
Got it. Next question. This is actually a good one from Ray. I'm talking myself into Teddy Bridgewater. Is there any saving me, or am I lost in the sunken place? I'll tell you what. I've been pretty outspoken. I'm not the biggest Teddy Bridgewater fan. I think that there is a very, very good chance that the New York Giants quarterbacks next year are Teddy Bridgewater and Justin Herbert.
You think there's a very good chance of that?
I think there's a very good chance because
I think that'll be the dream scenario at this point, right?
I think there's a very good chance. Think about it this way, right? Giants are going to have a top pick. They're probably going to spend it on a quarterback. You know for a fact that Gettleman is scouting Herbert very closely. You now have Pat Shurmur in New York, and you have Teddy Bridgewater, who has familiarity with Pat Shurmur's system, and needs to really get 1 year of starting under his belt for him to be able to hit that free agency market and get a contract. I think it's
a, but does he though?
That's the thing. I think it's a match made in heaven. I think that if you're Teddy Bridgewater and you're going to be a free agent, you're probably thinking to yourself, well, I need to go to a place where I'm going to start right away. There's going to be little to no competition. And, oh, I've already got familiarity with the head coach and the system that he runs. And I'm going to have Odell, Saquon, Engram, and Sterling Shepard to make me look good. I can't think of a better scenario.
Here's my question to you, though, is does Teddy Bridgewater have, like, in terms of, like, around the league, teams around the league, does Teddy Bridgewater have to show that he can play a full season?
Yeah, why would you commit big money to him?
Well, a team like Jacksonville, who won't be picking in the top five or in positions to the quarterback.
But there's no guarantee they part ways with Bortles. Not with that contract.
Well, the contract is essentially like a one-year deal. Like, I remember reading in the offseason, they essentially, the reason why they extended him, because originally he was playing on the fifth-year option, they just offered him that extension to basically lower his cap hit.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, so I think it is still like a one-year, essentially like a one-year deal with Bortles. But, I mean, if you're Teddy Bridgewater, could you be like, you know, why go to a place where it's more likely than not that they're going to take a quarterback high, whereas I can go to Jacksonville and already be in the starter and probably get more money there. So,
but also, yeah, but if you're Teddy Bridgewater, would you rather, how about this? Would you rather go to a place whose offensive line is in shambles? You are coming off what is probably going to be a bad season where the expectations were high and you guys failed. A coach you're not familiar with, and your best offensive weapon is Leonard Fournette. You don't really have any good receivers. Or you want to go with a head coach that you're familiar with, put up really good numbers with Odell, Saquon, Engram, and Shepard, and then go get that contract for a team that's going to need a quarterback. Because there's teams that need quarterbacks every year. It's not just going to be, you know, the Giants and Jacksonville and, you know, maybe the Raiders. It's going to be this need for quarterback all over the league. And when you get a guy like Teddy, who's going to be young, proven that he's healthy, proven that he can still play when he's got talent around him, I don't know. I think he'd rather gamble on himself because, you know,
what about the team the Giants are playing on Sunday?
Again, Tampa's another good one. I still think the Giants have the better weapons, but you're right. Listen, there will be competition for Teddy in free agency. Absolutely.
Yeah. I want to clarify something on Blake Bortles. So they could get out of it after this year and only take like they'll free up only like 4.5 of caps. But the way the contract is designed, it is essentially a 2-year, $36 million contract extension. Mm-hmm. So they're not stuck with them for another year, but they are like there's a lot of dead money they're gonna have to eat if they do part ways with them after this year.
Sure. Can we put Jamon Brown in the Ring of Honor yet? Yes. Here is another one from Drew. Same question. Do you agree Teddy will be worth pursuing so we can spend draft picks on the O-line and D? He and Shermer have a history, so it makes sense. That's pretty much what we just argued, so I would agree with Drew.
I'll put it this way. I think the Giants have to get a solid bridge quarterback.
Yes. Bridge quarterback?
Yeah. Like, you can't go into the draft. Quarterback. Yeah, you can't go into the draft with Kyle Laletta under contract and nobody else.
Right.
Like that would be a horrible, horrible way to do this.
Yeah.
Because if you miss out on, let's say for some reason you miss out on Herbert, you know, or, you know, he's not ready to play right away, which that could be the case my opinion, I don't think he's a day one starter. I think he might have to sit for a while, half a season or a season, whatever. But you have to get a bridge quarterback, and I think they will. Maybe Tyrod Taylor, Teddy Bridgewater, RG3, somebody like that who can come in and sort of be a bridge to the eventual successor.
Sure. This is an interesting one from Jake. Eli says he wants to play next year. Do you think he's got a shot to, and where? For me, I've been a big believer that Eli will retire a Giant, but I can also see a scenario in which Peyton starts whispering in his ear and says, hey, little bro, I went elsewhere when I was old as shit, and I still won because I went to a team that was able to surround me with the right pieces. So
Denver.
Yeah. They're a way less talented team than the one that Peyton had. But it's interesting. I still think, and this is an emotional thing, not a logical thing, I still think he retires a Giant.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the worst thing that could happen to Eli is for him to go somewhere else and stink up the bed there. Like, we talk about things that could impact his Hall of Fame thing. I think the one thing is him finishing with the losing record as a starter.
Yep.
But I think if he were to go somewhere and be completely bad, I think that could have an impact on his Hall of Fame too. I'm not saying he won't get in, but I think it could delay the process simply because that'll be just another fan base that would be like, he, you know, that would not resent him, but sort of be like, have some sort of resentment towards him. So I think you played 16 years in the NFL or 13 years in the NFL, two Super Bowls, New York City. You made a lot of money.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, you let it go, man. Like, you just retire.
Yeah.
But Eli will do what Eli's going to do. I don't know.
Yep. I don't have a question per se, but can you discuss how brutal the Monday Night Football announcing team and telecast was for the last New York Giants game? Yo, they just get worse and worse every week. They get worse and worse every week.
I was a big proponent of, hey, take Jason Wynn out of the booth.
Yes.
Put him on the Monday Night Football crew and put Booger up there.
Yeah.
But dude,
Booger's brutal.
There's a lot of people that have an opinion on Eli about going in the Hall of Fame or not. And that's fine. Like, I'll argue with people about that. I think he's going to get in the Hall of Fame. And I think, you know, I have the evidence to back it up. Like, if you look at Eli's career,
yes,
it is a Hall of Fame career when you look at the other quarterbacks in the Hall of Fame. But for Booger McFarland to say he's not a Hall of Famer and then make something up that simply is not true. He said that Eli has only made the playoffs when he's won the Super Bowl. That's not true.
It's not true.
Like, so that just shows how unprepared Booger McFarland is.
Correct.
Where he doesn't have his facts correct when he's about to make a point or have a take. You know what I think they should do? Put Louis Riddick in the booth.
Yeah, why not?
Put Louis Riddick in the booth. Joe Tessitore, I'm willing to see him for another year with like a competent, you know, analyst guy.
Sure.
Put him up there. Get rid of this Booger and his fucking thing that he sits on, his crane. And just have
moves around. Basically argues that players shouldn't go to the bathroom mid-game. They should just piss themselves.
Like, dude, like, just Lisa Salters is perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But Jason Wynn's not working, man.
He's brutal.
And they get bad week to week. They're not even improving. They're getting worse.
Let's do this one from Zaid. Landon Collins is very overrated. He's one of the worst in coverage. Simply a run stopper. Why does no one see that? Well, I wouldn't say very overrated. Maybe slightly overrated. I would also argue that he has yet to play with an even competent free safety in that backfield.
Or even competent linebackers.
Correct. So it's not too soon to judge Landon Collins, but it's pretty known that he is a good run stopper who will sometimes struggle in coverage. Get him like a good free safety, and I think that he can return to that level that we saw him play at 2 years ago.
And also, he was going against George Kittle, George Kittle is like slowly becoming one of the best tight ends in the NFL.
Bro, I'm in a keeper league. I just traded for him because my team sucks and I'm out of it, and I get to keep him for like a mid to late round pick next year.
And
he's a stud.
Eventually, we're going to be putting him in the same breath as the top tight ends in the league.
Oh, yeah.
So if Landon Collins struggles against George Kittle, I mean, you just got to, you know, you got to take it. But his pass coverage was never his strength. He's more of a box safety.
Yeah.
I don't think he's overrated. I mean, if you're trying to, you know, point to 2016 as like he's not playing to that par, I mean, 2016 was a phenomenal season, but he also played with a lot of good players on defense.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think he's a part of the future. I mean, I can see why people would not like him right now.
Yeah.
But
let's end on this one. This is from Gareth, who is in the UK. We love our international listeners. We've actually got a good chunk in the UK and in Germany. Probably some in Brazil. I got to look at the analytics again, but shout out to the international listeners. Don't get enough love.
How about those fans that travel from, what was it, like the Czech Republic to San Francisco to watch the Giants play?
It's crazy. The Giants low-key have a very big international following. And I, listen, credit to you guys who wake up at all fucking hours of the night and morning and whatever to watch a 1-7 football team play in primetime. I mean, kudos to you. I could not do the same.
I get like 3 tweets a week from I don't know if they're the same fans or they're different fans, but they're like, you know, I live in the UK and I, you know, I woke up or, you know, I stayed up this late to watch this,
and
this that, team.
And
and I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. We'll end on this question. Which ex-Giants player has the best chance of winning a Super Bowl ring this season? This is a tough one.
Ex-Giants player.
That's still in the league, obviously.
Well, let's
You'd be better at this question than I am.
Well, let's look at the Super Bowl favorites, the LA Rams. Yep. Do they have any former Giants? No, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
The Chiefs? Former Giant? No.
Saints?
Eli Apple?
Yo, Eli Apple. Yeah, might. Okay, so he might. The Saints are plus 200 to win the Super Bowl right now. Credit to me for getting them plus 2,000 after week 2.
They're the best team in football.
Yeah, so Eli Apple. That's a good one.
There you go.
We got anyone on the Chargers that's a former Giant?
Chargers. No, nobody's coming to mind from the Chargers. Pittsburgh. I mean, Chris Boswell had a cup of tea with the Giants in the preseason one time.
Yeah. I guess it would be Eli Apple. That's the easy answer.
Is there anybody in New England that used to be on the Giants?
New England. I don't think so. You know what? This is a testament to how shitty the Jerry Reese teams were. That there's literally one person, and it's a former first-round pick, that's on a roster that's in a competitive situation right now.
Yeah. I mean...
Wow.
Hard for me to think of. I mean, did anybody go to Carolina? I know Detroit signed a whole bunch of former Giant players.
Right, they're not a contender.
Yeah, but they're in last place in the division. I mean, L.A., can't think of anybody in L.A., yeah. Weston Richburg's in San Francisco. Justin Pugh's in Arizona. Eric Flowers is in Jacksonville. They're not going anywhere. No. Yeah. Eli Apple, man.
Eli Apple. Congratulations to Eli Apple.
Can I ask one last question?
Yeah. Joe? Sure.
The big news of this week has been Le'Veon Bell, one of the big news.
Sure.
What do you think about what he's done? Because there are people on both sides of the spectrum that, you know, I think if Le'Veon Bell wasn't a running back, if he played like corner or receiver or even quarterback, I think more people would be like, you know, it was the right thing to do. But he plays a position that's, you know, I know he's like, he's a guy that can go 2,000 all-purpose yards. But what do you think about his decision?
I mean, I agree with it. You know I'm a players guy.
Of course, me.
Yeah. And listen, I don't think it matters. I think... there's going to be a team that pays him a lot of money this next offseason. I think that team is going to be a very dumb team because you don't pay that much for a running back. And I know the argument is, you know, oh, he's also a receiver. There are plenty of guys out there that can do that. I don't blame him for not wanting to take on 400 touches and kill his body and then maybe get injured and go in, and then, you know, have his value in free agency be lowered. And guess what? You know, the Steelers are still fine. A team will pay Le'Veon big money, and he's healthy. So I think everyone's a winner here. I don't understand why everyone's in such a hubbub about it. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I think I have to wait and see. Todd Gurley got $45 million guaranteed. If he can get more than that, then I think he's the clear winner. Okay. If he gets that, then it's still going to be a debate because they're going to talk about how he left $14 million on the table. But it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see who else takes this route.
Yeah.
Which other players do this?
I agree.
You know, because Le'Veon Bell sort of created this thing where if they tag you the second time, just sit out.
Just sit out.
You know, And even if they tag you the first time. So we'll see what happens. But to me, this shows how bad the franchise tag is. To me,
I can't wait for them to redo all of this in 2 years.
To me, the franchise tag just ruins a team.
Yeah.
Because you're taking
someone hostage.
Yeah, only great players get franchise tag. Nobody's out there tagging their, you know, anybody from the bottom five of their roster.
Right. Like,
these are the top five guys. These are the guys that you want to build around. And you franchise tag a guy, you're basically telling him, yeah, I know you're good, but I just don't want to pay you.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it's sort of like how, you know, I was listening, I read an article from an agent, whereas the rookie deal, after the third year where you're eligible to pay him, you know after the third year if the guy is worth the big money contract.
Yeah.
And by you not paying him, you're just betting on yourself.
Right.
Because the market's just going to get more and more. His price is going to go higher and higher. So I'm going to see what happens with Le'Veon Bell. I'm very intrigued to see how this thing ends.
Me too.
What he gets, and if any other players try to go this route.
Yeah.
But
it's going to be interesting.
It is. It is. It is definitely going to be interesting.
All right.
But side note, I have James Conner on my fantasy team.
So you're a happy man. You're a happy man.
And I'm in first place in both my leagues. Everything is going great for me. Although I lost last week, but I'm still in first place.
Yeah, I got some adjustments to make if I want to make the playoffs.
All right.
Yeah, it's not great.
Fire your GM and your head coach.
Yeah, which would be me. I share a team with my father, and every week he lets me hear it. that's about it for us. Thank you guys for listening. Housekeeping, Twitter, follow me, EthanGSN, follow Weiss, NYG Daily, follow the blog off MSN, subscribe, iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Shout out to the sponsors, posterburner.com/GothamSN and mybookie.ag, promo code NYG. That's about it. Go Giants. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Peace.